Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, September 29th, 2009 on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do every 2 weeks on Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria, LLC. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority. Today I have a guest with us to discuss workforce measurements. I'd like to welcome Bob Gold to the show. Bob is founder of Tenacious Tortoise. He's been a consultant for 20 years, specializing in strategic planning, business performance improvement, and information technology management. Before launching Tenacious Tortoise, he was a vice president at Palladium Group, previously known as Balanced Scorecard Collaborative, and that's how we met. He was a thought leader for an executive working group that I was running at the time. Bob has an upcoming presentation at the American Strategic Management Institute conference in Chicago called Leverage Workforce Planning and Performance with Effective Measures. It sounded like it would be interesting for my listeners to hear, and so I've co-opted it, and you'll hear it here first. So, Bob, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me to be on. It's a pleasure to be experiencing the new media of Blog Talk Radio.
Great. So the listeners of this show are primarily, or I'm targeting it at least, people who are implementing change in their organization, usually from a change agent capacity, not necessarily from a leadership capacity. And so where does measurement and workforce measurement in particular relate, where does it fit in organizational change?
I think we should first start with just thinking about the importance of measures before we talk about the workforce. We have a lot of perspective and experience to reinforce the idea that we've heard over and over again, that measures motivate. Measure something and it causes a behavior change, not necessarily a good behavior change, but choosing the right measures, it can be a powerful way of driving change in the organization. And that's the mindset that led to the discipline at the firm that we worked at, Balanced Scorecard Collaborative. The idea of the Balanced Scorecard is that by selecting measures carefully to align with business strategy, you can more effectively motivate the right kind of change in the organization. When we talk about the workforce, though, and measuring the workforce, the very definition of an organization, at least in my mind, is a group of people who are part of an entity whose purpose is to create value. And central to that idea, of course, is the people. Organizations don't exist without people. And in many organizations these days, the people represent the most expensive or the most valuable asset to the organization. So when you have an asset, you have to manage it. You have to make good decisions about how to use that asset, how to invest in it, what kind of decisions you need to make about deploying or utilizing that asset. And measuring the workforce is the beginning of the process of effective workforce management. It is not the end, and it is not the only necessity, but it is an important prerequisite to being able to make good decisions about the management of the workforce, the most valuable asset in the organization. So I guess that's a start to my thinking there.
Okay. So we're talking about measuring the workforce. What question are you trying to answer?
Well, I think that as we look at organizations, and I mentioned a moment ago that every organization creates value.
Hopefully.
I'm sorry?
Hopefully.
Hopefully. hopefully, the purpose of every organization is to create value. Whether it does remains to be seen. But the role that the workforce plays in value creation is central. You know, how is the workforce going to be motivated to make the right decisions to ensure value creation? Is the value creation going to be efficient? Is it going to be effective? But there's also another key element to this idea of the workforce as an asset. The workforce is an asset that we use today to create value today. But a central element of nearly every organization is the desire to sustain that organization, to keep it going on an ongoing basis. And in order to do that, the organization has to evolve in response to opportunities and threats in its external environment. So an extension to this question of how can we manage the workforce most effectively to create value today is how do we understand the capability of the workforce to drive value creation in the future. And that is both kind of descriptive and prescriptive. It's descriptive because we can envision the way an organization might create value in the future. And we can ask the question, does our workforce actually line up with that future value proposition? It can also be a bit prescriptive in that we might, through our understanding of the workforce, be able to make better strategic decisions about how we want to evolve the organization. Because, of course, we don't just evolve the organization in response to opportunity and threat, but we evolve it also with respect to the strengths that we have today. So understanding the workforce is a vital part of the strategic planning or change process.
So it sounds like there's two key pieces. There's sort of the current state assessment piece of what you're measuring, just what do we have today, and then there's looking at the future, what do we want it to be instead of where it is today, and then I guess another piece of that is how do we get there from here?
Absolutely. Okay. I think you've summarized better than I could the two pieces there. And you know, I think what we need to do is dive just a little bit deeper to answer the question. So if we agree that it's important to measure the workforce, how do we go about making good decisions about what to measure? So I look at the kind of the universe of measures of a workforce and divide it into two broad categories. The first category is the asset view. And the second category is a behavioral view. Now, the asset view are the characteristics of the workforce that are relatively static. And when I say relatively static, they do change over time, but they do tend to change slowly. And within the asset view, there are two subcategories. One is called demographics. The demographics are the measures of the workforce that answer very simple questions. Who are they? How many of them are there? It's a question that isn't always easily answered because many large organizations' workforces go beyond the realm of just their employees. Their employees, their contractors, there's the extended workforce that may be in other firms that are networked together with the organization. So the very definition of the workforce may be described by the demographics. We're certainly interested in the cost of the workforce, the labor cost, the cost of the benefits that go along with that workforce, and the cost of housing or managing that workforce, so kind of the ancillary costs, the real estate, the furniture, the desk, the phones, all of that is all part of understanding the cost of the workforce. And another key characteristic of the demographics is movement. Now, I said that these are relatively static numbers, but one thing about demographics is growth. How big is the workforce today? How big was it a year ago? What constituted the change? So if we look at movement within the organization, where are people moving? Are they moving laterally? Is there promotions? These are important considerations for managing the workforce. But also the idea of turnover. What is the rate at which people are joining the workforce? What's the rate at which people are leaving? All of these are important to understand the workforce in the aggregate. In other words, to be able to describe not individuals, but chunks of the workforce and the workforce as a whole. What characterizes these demographic measures is that they're usually pretty easily gotten from an accounting or an HR organization. The accounting organization is most likely to have some of the cost information. The HR organization has information systems. And oftentimes data like this are collected either as part of complying with labor law or in anticipation of the kinds of legal actions that are relatively common in large corporations as a preparation for defense against suits about discrimination. So this data is often collected. It's usually collected fairly well, and it is usually fairly accessible. Mm-hmm. The second category, though, under the asset view, is far less effectively collected, and it's something that I think your listeners need to look closely at in their organizations. So that category is capabilities. And the capability of the workforce is not just a description of what the workforce is capable of doing as a whole. And, you know, the simple answer to that question is it's capable of running our organization today. But it's also looking at the capabilities as individuals so that when we're able to identify the skills and the capabilities and the experience of individuals within the organization, we can make better decisions about how to allocate those resources, how to get the right people in the right place at the right time. Now, that may sound a little odd if you think about organizations in the mode of the traditional manufacturing organization, where most people's jobs are very static and kind of defined by just their place in the process.
Mm-hmm.
But, excuse me, today there are far more organizations that are knowledge-based organizations in which the formation of teams to accomplish specific processes and specific tasks is more fluid. And in my experience, organizations struggle with making good decisions about getting the right people in the right place, oftentimes because they simply don't know what the people can do. But there's another important part of the capabilities discussion, and that goes back to my earlier statement about not just managing the asset for today, but managing the workforce asset for the future value creation of the organization. And that is gap analysis. We might have a clear direction for the future of the organization as expressed through strategy, and we might need to make decisions about how to invest in our asset of the workforce to make good decisions to align that capability set with what we expect to need. And that could be training and development within the organization. It could also be the hiring and divestiture decisions that are made about changing the nature, changing the role of the workforce. So the way in which these capabilities may be collected kind of at a fundamental level and usually totally ineffective is just by looking at job descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
In knowledge-based organizations, job descriptions just don't really tell the story. And oftentimes, every individual in an organization might have a very different job description. Something that's been used a bit more effectively is the idea of a skills inventory. The skills inventory might be a database that has a lot of information in it about various things that people could do, and employees would either self-rate or, working with their supervisors, come up with a standard rating of what they know and what they're capable of doing. And the last way that you might capture this is by maintaining in a central repository the history of various projects and processes that individual employees have worked with. And when that database is searchable, you may very well be able to answer the question, gee, didn't we do something like X 3 or 4 years ago? Who were the people who worked on that? And that's a capability that is far easier for me to imagine in organizations than I've actually been able to observe in my clients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just to recap, I guess you've got the asset view of measures, or different asset, or an asset as a type of measure. You've got demographics within that, and you've also got capabilities. So what other types of measures are there?
Okay, the other broad category, as I mentioned, is the behavioral view. This is far more dynamic, an understanding of the asset, because the behavioral view needs to reflect the fact that things change quickly. And I subdivide the behavioral view into two subcategories, attitudes and actions. Attitudes are the kinds of measures that answer the question, how does the workforce feel? What are they thinking about? What are they doing? What will they do? Especially what will they do given uncertainty? If you have a workforce full of people who are confident and trust their leaders, they're more likely to lead the organization into a riskier, unknown space under the leadership of the organization than people who are fearing for their jobs or fearing for their economic future. It's much harder to drive change in a workforce that is feeling anxious or uncertain. Now, typically, these attitudes are collected in attitude surveys. Some organizations have institutionalized the idea of the annual employee survey, and it's part of the culture, and it's no big deal from the perspective of the employees. But in other organizations, the attitude surveys are done sporadically, if at all, and when they are done, they're seen as an imposition by the employees. Perhaps it creates fear and uncertainty because they wonder, well, what are they up to now? Because it's not part of the normal management process. And these attitude surveys can result in unintended consequences. But more often than not, we simply see organizations in which the leadership are only understanding attitude from anecdotes, what other people are telling them. And through that process, there's a lot of distortion and I think a lot of bias based on wishful thinking.
Wishful thinking and rose-colored glasses, right?
Absolutely. But I want to spend a little bit more of our time together talking about the last of these four categories. Remember, we've already talked about demographics, capabilities, and attitudes. But I also want to talk about actions. And actions is a very simple question. What is the workforce doing now? Now, it sounds like an obvious question, but if you were to ask, as I have, leaders and organizations, what's the workforce working on? The answer to the question is really, well, they're running the company. But it's not a very granular answer. And more importantly, when you consider the cost of the workforce and the fact that given how they're spending their time, there's going to be some discretion, sometimes spent doing things that employees choose to do, either as a result of direction by their management or their own instincts. This represents a huge investment on the part of the organization that is essentially either unmanaged or incompletely managed. So as far as trying to understand what the workforce is doing now, there are two ways to collect the data. One is a project management office. The project management office would be capturing a component of the action, which would be projects in the organization. And we'll talk perhaps a bit more about that when I divide up the time of action. The other way is just fundamental time reporting. Now, time reporting is also often seen by employees as being somewhat intrusive. It's prying. It's none of their business how I spend my time as long as I get my job done. There's a host of attitudes that will resist the idea of time reporting. But in
to be clear about time reporting, when you say that, you're talking about somebody keeping track of every minute of their day?
Well, there's degrees to the concept of time reporting. Of course, in a manufacturing environment, we have a rudimentary form of time reporting, which is the punch cards or the time clock, which these days is probably done with somewhat more sophisticated technology. At the other extreme is what you described, which is kind of a self-reporting scheme in which individuals will report every minute of every day. And that can be extraordinarily burdensome. But there's a middle ground for time reporting, which can impute how people are spending their time, in some cases based on automated systems, when they're logged on to various applications or when they're engaged in work on the telephone in a call center, something like that. And in that case, there can be reporting on the exceptions. You know, when are people working on various projects? Or for individuals who are working with clients, they might, at the end of the week or the end of the month, provide some broad estimate of how much of their time they're spending in each of a number of categories. But the detail in this is the challenge, is coming up with the right categories for time reporting. How do we make a scheme that is not so overwhelming that people feel like they have too many categories to choose from, and at the same time is not so basic that it doesn't reveal any useful information from the effort of time reporting?
Yeah, and I would think that there's another piece of this that is that people might feel, like you said, intrusive, that it's intrusive. You know, how do I get away with being on Facebook for 10 minutes? Things like that.
Yeah, and, you know, in my conference presentation, when I put this together, I drew a pie chart showing the two categories of time that I'd like to talk about, and I deliberately left a narrow slice that was not filled in, and that's unproductive time. And I think it's important when introducing time reporting that the message be sent that it is not intended to be used as a tool for punishing employees or for monitoring individual behavior so much as it's a tool for understanding how the workforce is operating. Unproductive time is not going to be changed as a result of time reporting. It's simply a fact, and it's foolish, I think, for management to think that they can squeeze a little bit more productivity out of the organization. Let me briefly talk about the two broad categories of action time. One is process time, and if you imagine for an organization drawing a picture of the way the organization creates value, like a flow chart, or more properly called a process model, you could probably come up with a category for each of the several boxes on the chart. So, for example, if you're an organization like Netflix, you're going to have actions that have to do with operating the website. You're going to have actions that have to do with sending out and receiving the DVDs through their mail service. You're going to have a buying function that goes out and gets the DVDs and distributes them to the distribution centers. Each of these kinds of processes can be identified, and then time can be captured. And that's really important because then you can begin to understand the cost of each process and make better decisions about which processes might be ripe for reengineering or optimization. The other category of action time is project time. And that's a good kind of a segue back to our overall topic of change. Because project time is the time that people spend actually doing things that are not part of the day-to-day operation of the organization. Project time is intended to change the organization. And there's project time that is intended to optimize current business processes, and that would be called operational project time. And then the remainder, what's left at the end, when everything else is done, all the processes, all the process improvement, are the projects that change the organization itself, the strategic projects that drive change in the organization. And if I briefly touch back on my Netflix example, Netflix is on its way to evolving from a post office-based distribution model to an internet-based distribution model, in which you'll receive your movies not through the mail, but streaming over the internet. And to evolve the value proposition of Netflix requires people in the organization whose job isn't just to run the business today, but to reinvent the business and to change the way the business operates for the future. At the end of the day, most organizations have very, very limited capacity for change. And that's the time that they have to spend to reinvent themselves. The important part of capturing this time is not just to be able to say how much of it we have, but to answer for leaders of the organization the question, what are the pieces of our strategy that are being worked on and who's working on them? Oftentimes we'll see there are too many projects with not enough people working on them, and the projects simply aren't getting done. The result of effective workforce time management can be fewer projects that have better allocation of resources, the right people on the right projects, making the right changes in the organization to drive the strategy. And I think that if we look at an organization and we score how effectively it's measuring its workforce, one key measure is that we know where people are when they're doing discretionary work. We know what is the work that they're doing, and we know that we have the capacity to drive that workforce resource towards strategic and operational change.
One of the things that you just made me remember, a few years ago I was working at a manufacturing company. One of the things that we did to assess, not necessarily time, but how much our resources were being used on projects, was just list on one side of a piece of paper all the projects that were going on or that we wanted to have happen, and then across the other axis, across the top, you know, have the names of all the people on our team. And we just said, well, who's working on what? And we could get an idea of, well, who's too busy, who's working on 20 things, you know, and who's only working on two, and what
things aren't getting done.
Heather,
I know you all too well, and I'm guessing that you were one of the people who was working on too many things and that everybody was depending upon to get those projects done.
Well, I was one of them, but
yeah.
Yeah. So, but it was a good exercise to be able to show that and see what was really going on.
Yeah, I agree. It's an exercise that is often extremely eye-opening for executives and change agents in the organization, because the frustration that executives feel, I think, boils down to we know where we need to go, we know what we need to do, but it seems as though nothing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when we begin to dissect how the workforce is spending their time, they're spending 90% of their time just struggling to keep the business running as it is today. And the little bit of time that's left over is mostly devoted to operational performance improvements, tweaking and improving and optimizing the status quo. And it's no wonder in those organizations that there is simply not enough time in the day and not enough people allocated to the task of driving change in the organization.
Great way to sum that up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go ahead and wrap up now. And I'll let everyone know that you can learn more about workforce measurement and other topics related to change and strategy management on Bob's blog. Say that 5 times fast. His blog is at blog.tenaciouStortoise.com.
And tenacious,
Bob, thank you so
and
much
tenacious
for being
tortoise
here.
Is all one word.
Yes, tenacious tortoise is all one word. Thank you. So, Bob, thank you for being here. Been a great discussion.
I really enjoyed it. I think we've got a minute left, and I just wanted to make a couple of real quick points,
mm-hmm.
Kind of takeaways for your listeners. Point number one, measure what matters. We talk a lot about measurement in organizations, and every measure has a cost, both a tangible cost, but also the intangible cost. And I've mentioned the idea of intrusiveness a lot. You do have to be careful about the questions that you ask people, and you have to have a good rationale. So measure what matters. Two, measure the actions of the workforce. Remember that they're the most valuable asset, and make the investment to understand what they're doing all the time. And three, recognize and manage this concept of capacity for change. Does your organization have the capacity to drive the strategy, to drive the changes it needs?
Thank you.
Okay.
So I just want to use our last minute here to talk about the next episode is coming up in 2 weeks called Accountability is Meaningless. This is an episode that was going to happen 2 weeks ago. Unfortunately, I couldn't do the episode then, so we'll be moving it to Tuesday, October 13th, 2009 at 11 a.m. Eastern. We're going to talk about that one of the reasons accountability seems to be so elusive is because we don't really define it in organizations. And so I'll be giving a definition and sharing the key pieces that you need to ensure accountability. And so I'd like to thank you for listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma. Take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be.
Happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.